Hold that dog!
We present The Dark Lady of Doona by Jane Cassidy.
Morach ni Dole Flaherty. Would you have us wait till dusk falls and we have to sail blind through the rocks and reefs of Clue Bay?
Oh, indeed. Indeed not, Grania New Ailey. Though with your skills as a seafarer, I know I would be in safe hands.
What have you got in these barrels? I've no room aboard for such cargo. I intend to do some business myself in London, so I have every corner of the galley packed with hides and woolens.
These goods are not for sale or barter. These I will offer to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth I of England from her worthy subjects, the O'Flahertys of Connacht, Ireland.
Ah, you old goose. Do you think a queen who presides over rivers of pearls would be impressed by barrels of tallow and salted herrings?
I'm sure the woman needs the odd candle or two about her palace. Or does she have the power to make the sun shine on her benighted kingdom?
You're right. Stow Monarch's cargo below and make ready to sail.
My heart misgives me, Grania. I fear we may never see the plain of Mursk again.
And if we turn and creep back towards the land, what will become of us?
It is a dangerous world we inhabit. When one woman has more power than the O'Flaherty, the O'Neill, the O'Donnell, the MacWilliam, and every chieftain in Ireland combined.
I am the fly, Morach. And Elizabeth is the spider. I'm going to the center of the spider's web, to London. And there I intend to fight Bingham and all his clique with words. Bingham. I have not slept one easy night since Sir Richard Bingham came into this country.
He and his damned brother harried us like hounds.
Bingham will not rest till he has reduced us and our followers to beggars. He will be satisfied when we are crawling in the ditches with our mouths stained green from eating stalks and nettles. That is why I must make this journey to London. I will see Queen Elizabeth myself and persuade her to cut the thread that binds Bingham to her.
Bingham will have written to the Queen about us. They may well hang us as rebels as soon as we set foot on land.
July 1593. Sir Richard Bingham to the Queen's Private Secretary, Burley. There be two notable traitors gone over, Sir Morrow Nadeau and Grania O'Malley, both rebel from their childhood and continually in action. And if such be heard to complain against the officer, or rewarded with anything from Her Majesty, it will be the highway to make more rebels.
Oh, Grania! I'm going to die! Oh, how can you make your living on board one of these infernal galleys?
Oh, Morach. Come up into the fresh air. Sitting below here is the worst remedy. A few lungfuls of sea air. And look up, Morach. Look westward and keep your eyes fixed on the horizon. I've always been happiest at sea. I had my father Owen Pester to bring me on board with him whenever he set sail. My father, Drew Darwood, never submitted to the English. I'm glad that he died before the net began to be tightened on us.
I hear Bingham has penetrated Clue Bay, and his soldiers are installed below in Rockfleet Castle.
I have no rest while my men are driven out of their beds and away from the heat of the fires by Bingham's troops. They steal the very bite out of our mouths.
I and my followers have already begun to scatter back beyond the bogs and into the depths of the woods, as if oak trees will protect them from the English, where their chieftain's arm has failed.
Do, Dara. Yes, Owen, my father, was my dark oak. There has never been a man I loved as much as him.
And have you forgotten young Hugh de Lacy? They say he was your greatest love.
Is that what they say? Look north, Morach. Can you see the mountains of Achill? A mass of dark upon a darkening sky. He lies there in those black woods. A man's white bones scattered with the ribs and antlers of the deer he hunted. Hugh de Lacy. He was beautiful.
You didn't have him long, Grainne.
If I had so little time to love, it was the MacMahons of Ballycroy were to blame. It was they who killed Hugh and left his body to the birds in the woods of Achill. And then for them to come with his blood still warm on their hands, making pilgrimage to the holy island of Caer.
You took a terrible revenge, Grainne Whaley. Were you not afraid of God's retribution when you cut them down while they prayed?
Morrough, the Christian God may well set the sun and the moon in the sky and cause the seas to ebb and flow, but between one dawn and the next, I think he pays scant attention to our activities. I've seen too much betrayal and slaughter of the innocent to believe otherwise. Survival is the law I have followed, often in defiance of Gaelic and English law alike. What protection did I, as a woman, ever receive from the Breton laws? I was entitled to get one third of my husband Donal Uncully's land on his death. Yet I had to go back to Uil Uachtarach, to my father's country, empty-handed.
Oh, come now, Grainne. If your husband Donal was called the cock for his courage, you weren't called the hen for nothing. Didn't the O'Flahertys know well enough that you had the means of securing your own livelihood through maintenance by land and sea? And didn't you take many of the O'Flaherty followers with you when you left that country?
They'd have followed me to the ends of the earth. Some of them are still with me and have grown old in my service. My followers look to me and not to oak trees to defend them. And they know I'll fight more bravely than any man to preserve them and their families. Together we have ruled the seas from Slinehead to Erris, and every ship that passed has to pay its price for safe passage through our waters.
They'll hang you as a pirate yet, Grainne Whaley.
The English call me a pirate, but they extort their taxes at the point of a sword. So where's the difference between Elizabeth and me? Successful pirates both.
I trust you won't communicate that particular thought to Her Majesty.
No, Mark, for I suspect she knows it well enough.
To the Queen's Secretary, Sir Francis Walsingham, from Sir Henry Sidney, Lord Deputy of Ireland, 1583. There came to me a most famous feminine sea captain called Grainne O'Malley, offered her services unto me wheresoever I would command her, with 3 galleys, 200 fighting men, either in Scotland or Ireland. This was a notorious woman in all the coasts of Ireland. This woman did Sir Philip Sidney see and speak with all. He can more at large inform you of her.
And what did you make of this Irish pirate queen?
Oh, strange as it may seem, she made a most feminine appearance. Dark-haired, with a face tanned by many years on the open sea. But it was her vitality that struck me most. I'd heard incredible stories about her, most of which I took to be wildly exaggerated. I asked her to tell me how she came to be known as the Dark Lady of Duna. She described capturing and installing her followers in the MacMahon stronghold of Duna Castle, having already killed some of the MacMahons in revenge for the murder of her lover, a Hugh de Lacy. Seeing my admiration for her ability to sack castles, she recounted a siege she once broke by melting down the lead roof of her hen's castle and pouring the molten mess down on the besiegers below. She, of course, neglected to add that the besiegers were English soldiers. I was curious about her relationship with her husband, Richard in Iron, and cautiously inquired of her if her husband might be intimidated by such a warlike wife.
We did not marry for love, but for convenience. I needed a more secure stronghold and one that lay at a safe harbour. Richard's Rockfleet Castle was ideal for my purposes. And for Richard in Iron, chief of the Burkes of Cara and Barasul, it was a good marriage. So didn't I bring with me a fleet? Hundreds of men and 1,000 or so cows. And he knew I'd help him to secure the MacWilliam title in due course.
Apparently they married for 1 year certain, a most singular arrangement, but one permissible under the old Breton laws. The marriage could be terminated by one party simply declaring, "I dismiss you."
He went off on one too many of his foolhardy warring sorties. And when he returned home, he found his own Rockfleet castle closed against him. I had installed my own followers in the stronghold. He could do nothing but fume at the foot of the wall and bellow for the hen to let him in. He cut a rare figure, clanking round in his armour, overcome with rage. I called out to him over the battlements. Richard and Eirden, I dismiss you.
But obviously she relented, because when I met her, she and Richard in Iron had been married for nigh on 10 years.
And is there any issue from this tempestuous alliance?
A son named Theobald, or Tippet of the Ships, as he's known. Like Grace O'Malley herself, he seems to have been brought up more on sea than on land. They say he was born on board ship during one of Grace's trading expeditions to Spain. I asked one of her followers to confirm the veracity of the story, and he added an amazing sequel. The day after the birth, the ship was attacked by Turkish pirates. The battle was going badly for the Irish when the captain went below and pleaded with Grace to come up on deck and rally the men. She cursed her captain with the words, "May you be 7 times worse this day 12 months, who cannot do without me for one day," and stormed onto the deck. She fired off a blunderbuss at the attackers, saying, "Take this from unconsecrated hands."
And of course her men won the day. Do you really believe all these tall tales, Philip?
If you meet her, you have to believe all of this is quite possible.
Grania! Grania! The girl is driving us up onto Loop Head. We'll all be lost!
Morrough, will you let go of my sleeve? God, but you're like a child in arms. Have you never seen the sea heaped up before a gale before? We've weathered worse than this. Oh, but go below, Morrough, or we lose you overboard. This will be a long night.
We've cleared Loop Head.
If we can work our way around into the mouth of the Shannon, then Dunmore Head will keep the worst of the storm from our shoulders till daylight.
Aye. She's riding easier now.
Grania ni Gwely! Young Owen has spied a galley! Easy prey to our turret lady!
Let's have a look at her, Tig. A sluggish beauty, right enough. What would you think the range of her guns will be?
Guns? Grania, under no circumstances are you to attack that ship and risk our mission for a few pieces of Spanish gold?
A few pieces of Spanish gold, Morrough? Have you any idea what such a vessel might be carrying? She may well be on her way home to Spain from the Americas, blown off course by last night's gale. If you can hold and fire a blunderbuss, then you'll have your share of the plunder. She's as clumsy and awkward to maneuver as a cow in a bog. If we can bear down on her with speed, we'll have her rigging cut before she can even turn her guns upon us.
Another ship to port and fast approaching. An English patrol.
Damn these English! Bear this waiting. A month rotting in the filthy waters of the Thames.
I'm afraid to set foot on land now. There's so much sickness in this place.
I thought a great deal of the splendors of this city that first morning I walked through its streets. The spires, the huge buildings, the noise. I thought it the most exciting place on earth. And now, to be breathing the air of Clubay.
Grania ni Gwely, a message from Thomas, Duke of Ormond.
I am summoned to appear before Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth tomorrow at Greenwich Castle.
And what about me?
There's no mention of you here.
Surely I'm named also.
You will, I hope, accompany me. Though you will not be admitted to the Queen's presence.
It is disgraceful. I, Chief of the O'Flahertys, a loyal subject and supporter of the Queen in Connacht for the past 30 years, I risk my life to come and pay my respects at court, and she has not even the courtesy to refer to me by name.
You, Chief of the O'Flahertys, the title my poor Donal and Cullie was heir to, and you, Murrough na Doe, bent your knee to the English Queen, and in return they made you the O'Flaherty. Donal and I would have led the O'Flahertys if it hadn't been for your fawning on the English.
Oh, I wondered that you hadn't flung that old quarrel in my face long before we reached the English Channel.
You shattered the peace of Connacht by setting yourself above the rightful chieftain, Donal Crone.
Peace in Connacht. Peace in Connacht. When was there ever peace in Connacht for more than 2 summers together? And who are you, Grace O'Malley?
to accuse me of playing the English card. You played it often enough and profited well by it.
And it was from you I learned the trick. I was a young married woman nursing my children, but I watched you trump all the Gaelic chieftains with that English card. And isn't that why we're here now, Murrough? Humbly waiting in the stinking Thames River to go down on our knees to this English queen. We have been enemies for most of our lives, Murrough. But you and I have not so many more years to live. Do you want to lay your old bones on damp straw under a ditch and watch your children's inheritance stolen by Bingham and his men? I'll fight to the last to hold my castle, my ships, and secure a living for my family. So, swallow your pride, you old fool, and help me plan what to say to this woman. If we have any pride left, Murrough, it must not be shown here. If we cannot win by force of arms, then we'll survive by flattery and cunning.
Your Majesty, I must tell you, I think it undesirable for you to meet with this Irish woman. Sir Richard Bingham's authority would be seriously undermined if she was received at court.
Yes. A notable traitress and nurse to all rebellions in the province for 40 years. You see, I've read all the papers you have put before me to dissuade me from meeting this Grace O'Malley. And Francis, you have merely succeeded in making me all the more determined to do so. Oh, take your black looks elsewhere. I want to know at first hand about Richard Bingham's handling of the situation in Ireland. So let this Grace O'Malley present herself and account for her behavior. Summon her, Walsingham.
Your Majesty.
Grace O'Malley, daughter of Owen O'Malley of Amal Uchtarath in the province of Connaught, Ireland. Widow of Donald O'Flaherty, tanished to the O'Flaherty title. Widow of Richard Burke, chief of the McWilliam clan of the province of Connaught, Ireland.
Rise. We are favorably disposed to hear your petition and receive news of our subjects in the province of Connaught, Ireland.
Your gracious Majesty, it is in the teeth of the gale of our woes that we stretch out our hands to your most gracious Majesty, beseeching you to save your humble subjects from the death and disaster which threaten us.
The death and disaster of which you speak, are they not of your own making?
To see our children butchered, our lands laid waste, our property stolen, and our homes occupied by strangers? These are not the disasters any man or woman would knowingly bring upon his family.
My governor, Sir Richard Bingham, a most efficient servant of Our Majesty, informs me that by your constant rebellions you have forced him to deal most severely with you.
If it please your Majesty, most of the present unrest stems from Sir Richard Bingham's disregard for our ancient rights of inheritance.
You would advocate, then, that the primitive Gaelic Brehon laws are superior to our English system?
I kneel here in awe of your Majesty and of the power of your great realm, a power which flows from your hand and touches every corner of your kingdom. As a young woman, I watched the English power in Ireland grow. And yes, we Irish clung to what we knew, in fear of the unknown, in fear of the strangers and their strange tongue. But we have learned. Through my lifetime, I have learned to respect the English administration and wish for myself and my children to come within its protective arm. I am a seafarer, Your Majesty. And where possible, I use the prevailing wind to fill my sails and speed me on my course. But Richard Bingham tries to make headway against the wind. And thus, we are battered and threatened with disaster by the conflicts which ensue.
You speak most eloquently on your own behalf and that of your dependents. You have children. Arise.
Yes, Your Majesty. Owen, Murrough, and Margaret by my first husband, Donal Uncovey O'Flaherty, and Theobald by my second husband, Richard in Erin.
Some of the Bingham laws relating to marriage and divorce are interesting. I have it here that you married the said Richard for a period of 1 year certain.
Yes, Your Majesty. Under the ancient Breton laws, that is not unusual.
And under what circumstances is divorce available?
A woman might divorce her husband for sterility, impotence, taking a second wife, being a churchman, beating her, of course, and blabbing about the marriage bed.
I take it men have similar rights.
Yes, Your Majesty.
And did you divorce your husband, Richard, after 1 year?
I did dismiss him at the end of that year. But it was more to teach him a lesson. We were later reconciled, and it was but 10 years after death finally divorced us.
And your sons, are they as fearless as their mother?
Fine, strong sons. But Owen, my beloved Owen is dead, murdered by Sir John Bingham.
I have read your accusations against Captain John Bingham in this case. He asserts that your son, Owen, was one of the leaders of the Burke Rebellion in Mayo.
I beg your Majesty to believe that this is false. Owen had not taken part in the rebellion. He brought many of Bingham's soldiers to his island stronghold to entertain them. And there they murdered him without trial or cause. One of Owen's followers, O'Toole, was hanged that night. What can you say of men who could hang a man of 80 years? And now, Tibbet, my third son, my pride and joy, my comfort in my declining years. Tibbet is in Bingham's hands, and I fear for his life. A word from your Majesty would set him beyond any danger.
It would be a hard heart which could not be moved by a mother's tears. But your recent dealings with your son, Murrough, have been less than maternal.
I attacked Murrough in anger, in deep anger, that he aligned himself with Bingham, a man who not only threatened to destroy us all, but who betrayed the interests of his great queen.
Have a care, Grace O'Malley. These are serious accusations you level against my governor.
I beseech your Majesty to believe that my passionate words are born of grief for my son Owen and despair at seeing my country laid waste by misguided men. How could I fail to turn my grief and anger on Murrough when he stood side by side in battle with his brother's murderers?
Lady Mary, a handkerchief.
Your Majesty.
Dry your tears. What's this? You cast my gift into the flames with disdain.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Your Majesty. The handkerchief, in my grief, I did not think. Our tradition is to burn any soiled linen after use.
A singularly wasteful proceeding, if hygienic. Have you not enough water for washing?
Indeed, Your Majesty. We have rain from 1 year's end to the next. The clouds sweep in from the Atlantic, bundle up over Connacht, and weep floods upon us.
I understand that you Irish have your own ways. Your dress intrigues me. How is it named?
Alena.
Mm.
It is most attractive, is it not, ladies?
May I in turn compliment your majesty on your magnificent attire? My eyes are dazzled by the jewels on your gown, but more so by the beauty of your face.
Ah, Grace O'Malley. For women of our age, beauty is a thing we must leave behind. But we have been beautiful.
I see great beauty still in your majesty's face. A bright eye, an unblemished complexion, and above all, a strength and compassion which gives your majesty's face light as the flame makes the candle live.
You are more able at the art of flattery than any man, Grace O'Malley. But then you have proven yourself capable of the manly arts of war and seafaring.
As a widow, I have been forced to fend for myself. My two families, by marriage, refuse to render me due portion of my husband's lands and property.
You state here that under the old laws, you were entitled to one-third of your husband's lands on their death. And who is now in possession of these disputed lands?
My sons enjoy their father's lands.
Ah. So, you ask me to aid and abet your sons with one hand and chastise them with the other.
I wish, above all, for Tibbet to be set free. For myself, I simply ask for some security and provision in my declining years.
And if I call off the hounds of Grace O'Malley, what guarantee have I that you will not henceforth be the mother to more rebellions and harry the English shipping out of Galway?
Your Majesty, if I am left in peace to finish my days in Rockfleet Castle without Bingham's men stealing the very heat of my fire and the food from my mouth, I will not be driven to desperate measures.
Take yourself home to Connaught, Grace O'Malley, before the autumn storms make your journeys more hazardous.
Well, Grainne, what did she say?
She would make an excellent card player. She wears that chalky face like a mask. I think my words moved her. At times I caught a spark of warmth in those eyes. Oh, time only will tell what her intentions are towards us. But now, the tide is rising, and by nightfall we will be beyond the mouth of the Thames and homeward bound. Come, Mark, we must make ready to sail. I will tell you all, oh!
Take a letter, Walsingham.
Your Majesty.
To Sir Richard Bingham, Governor of Connaught, Ireland, 6th of September, 1593. Where our Treasurer of England, by his letters in July last, did inform you of the being here of several persons of our province of Connaught, that is, Sir Murrough O'Flaherty and Grace O'Malley. Grace O'Malley hath made humble suit to us for our favour towards her sons, that they might be at liberty. We perceive by your letters that her eldest son, Murrough O'Flaherty, is no trouble, but is a principal man of his country and a dutiful subject, and therefore, by you, favored. But the second son, Tibbet Burke, is by you justly detained, but may be dismissed on bonds for his good behavior, wherewith we are content, so as the old woman may understand, we yield thereto in regard of her humble suit. And further, for the pity to be had of this aged woman, having not the custom of the Irish any title to any livelihood, or position, or portion of her two husband's lands, now being a widow. And yet her sons, enjoying their father's lands, we require you to deal with her sons in our name, to yield to her some maintenance for her living, the rest of her old years.
In The Dark Lady of Duna, Grainne was played by Marie Mullen. Murrough O'Flaherty was Tony Doyle, and Elizabeth I was Margaret Darcy. Sir Philip Sidney was played by Robert O'Mahony. Sir Francis Walsingham was John O'Hara, and Tighe was Robert Taylor. Additional parts were played by other members of the cast. The Dark Lady of Duna was written by Jane Cassidy and directed by Pam Brighton.